Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. On the telephone today, we have with us Trevor Baker, who's the owner and cider maker of Noble Cider in Fletcher, North Carolina. Trevor, tell us about who you are, where you came from, and how the Noble Cider organization got started.
We got started about 3 years ago as a company. I either the misfortune or the opportunity, as some people might say, to get laid off from a job that I'd had for about 4 or 5 years. Fortunately, I had some time to kind of reevaluate what the next step was. We were both cider drinkers. She has some gluten allergies and can't drink a lot of beer, so we naturally drifted towards cider, which at the time there wasn't a whole lot on the market in the retail shelves, not as much as there is today. But that idea of starting a cider company was born from that. Myself, my wife, and our friend Lee Stevens were kind of sitting around, and we're like, hey, you know, let's pursue this crazy idea of starting a cider company, because we have apples. You know, locally here in Henderson County, being the number one county in North Carolina for apples. I immediately signed myself up for a little cider class taught by Peter Mitchell, and he comes over to the U.S. and teaches classes both on the West Coast and the East Coast, and I managed to get into one of those classes on a cancellation, and I thought that the cards were in my favor, so I went, learned all about how to make cider on a commercial level, all the production techniques and things of that nature. And came back to Asheville, and we just took off running. Immediately applied for our licenses and permits and all that good stuff. And, you know, we haven't looked back since. We started, obviously, there in Fletcher. We had a little warehouse that we rented. And just last year, we purchased a building here in Asheville, in West Asheville. And we moved in, and we're in a much larger location now. So that's kind of the story of how we got going.
You mentioned something in your run up to this point about license and permits. This is something that a lot of our wannabes keep asking me about. I don't have any experience with that because I haven't gone through the process of getting a license and all that kind of stuff here in North Carolina. So give us a few minutes on what that process is like, how long it takes.
You have to start with the federal level. There's, you know, your federal, in our case, winery. Cider is a wine, technically. So it's a winery license or a winery permit from the federal government. And that process, it's paperwork. It's not as daunting as it seems. I mean, once you get all your paperwork done correctly, I did it myself. We actually started with almost hardly any money at all. I think we cobbled together about $20,000 of our own money, and we got economic loan on the other end of that to help us start. But we certainly couldn't afford to have a lawyer do it for us, so I tackled it myself. It's not as bad as it seems. I mean, it's just paperwork, you know. You have to have a building. You have to have a lease in the company's name. That's the basic starting point. So you are on the hook a little bit. You got to put some skin in the game beforehand. You know, you're kind of sitting on this building that you can't really make wine in yet, but you're paying for it because you have a lease. But the process for the federal side is a couple of months. And then once you get your federal permit, you can then apply for the state license from the ABC Commission. They were a little faster, so all in all, you could potentially get it done in 3 to 4 months, I would say. It took me a little longer. I made a mistake on my first send-off on the paper and, you know, got sent back and had to make some corrections, which just add into the time there. So it's seemingly daunting, but once I got into it and was doing it, it wasn't as bad as a lot of people think. It does take a little perseverance.
I'm certainly glad that you persevered, Trevor, and came up with a cidery for the folks here in Western North Carolina to enjoy. Let's speak a little bit about the apples part. Of course, everybody in this region knows that Henderson County is fabulous for the amount of apples and the different kind of apples that grow there. So tell us a little bit about where you actually get your apples from, what kind of apples, what kind of regulations do you have to follow in using apples?
Because we're not creating fresh juice, we don't have to deal with USDA. The alcohol process pretty much kills a lot of the, or all of the known human pathogens. But that being said, we have a little less problems there. I know that a lot of the fresh fruit growers and the fresh juice makers, they have a whole other level of paperwork they've got to deal with that we don't have to deal with. We can simply go in, buy the apples, and we get as local as we can year-round. They start to peter out this time of year with availability, but we're getting in some on the earlier season stuff. You'll find some ginger golds. The early season is really the hard time to get good apples for cider making, but typically around September is when some of the really more interesting fruit comes in. You're starting to get Johnnigolds and some Granny Smiths, and Pink Ladies are a late season apple. We use those as much as we can. We use Golden Delicious. It's actually a pretty good cider apple, really. I mean, for a dessert fruit, it has nice sugar content as well as some decent acid in it. Kind of get what you can get. First rule of cider making is use what you have available to you. And in Henderson County, you're getting a lot of these grocery store type eating apples. So we use all of those that we can find down there. The Mutsu or Mutsu or Crispin apple, it has different names and different pronunciations, but all the same apple. Those are great apples. We use Gold Rush, which is another late season apple. Fantastic cider making apple. Stamen Winesaps, that's a really nice apple to throw in the mix if you can get them. I mean, even some of the heirloom fruits that are harder to come by, you've got the Arkansas Blacks, which have a decent amount of tannin for a southern fruit. Sometimes you're stuck with Red Delicious or Rhones, and you got to throw them in the mix, and that's what you got to do. But for the most part, we have a pretty good blend. It's a nice cider-making blend that we can get from the local apples around here. So it's been fun, and it's been fun learning about the orchard side of the fruit, which I have a keen interest in that as well. So it's kind of coming full circle for me as a buying apples locally, and I think for consumers too, they like to see they like the supply chain, you know what I mean? They like to see that, you get local apples coming in, you press it into juice, and then you turn it into cider or wine or whatever you're making, if you're getting grapes, and then you can sell it right to the consumer. They like that tight circle,
Absolutely.
And cider has that, and that's a big appeal to consumers, I think.
Let me go back, Trevor, just for a second and pick up a couple points that you had mentioned. It appears to me that cidery operations should be like a seasonal sort of thing, but you make it sound like it's almost a year-round activity.
Oh, yes. In fact, the highest demand for any craft beverage or any beverage and any alcohol in general is the summertime from Memorial Day through Labor Day, right? Which is kind of the exact opposite of when apples are around. So it creates interesting logistical obstacles, so to speak. But yeah, we pull from cold storage. As apples are in season and being harvested, obviously you're getting them. And that happens all the way up through late November, especially with some of the later season stuff. By the time it gets graded out, you're starting to pick up some of those nice Pink Ladies and Gold Rush. And you still got quite a few grannies around that hold their own pretty well in a cooler, So we typically are pulling out of the coolers that either co-ops or privately owned all the way up until, we just pressed fruit last week or week before. So there's still apples around. A lot of it is contracted fruit for the various producers, like Gerber and places like that. But at this point of the game, we either have to go to someone who has a store of apples that also juices, like Applewed. Greg Nix down there, he's got his own juicing operation, and he has his own coolers. Or you've got to go outside of the state, typically Virginia, Pennsylvania, for a few months out of the year. It gets a little scarce down here. We're hoping that over time, growers will start seeing an opportunity there and put more land under cultivation and also have the secondary facilities to store apples and things of that nature. And pretty much we do a mix of trying to get as much juice as you can and store it in a cider state, a fermented state, in a holding tank, try and bridge that gap where the apples are fewer to find. So, yeah, there are a few months out of the year where we've got to look elsewhere for our fruit, and we're kind of entering into that phase right now. It just happens to coincide with the busiest selling season. So that is a dilemma, but cider is a year-round activity, especially with just the popularity of and the trend of cider on being on the rise. It's a terrible thing to not be able to keep up, and that's kind of where we've been, is not being able to keep up most of the time. So,
I understand from our conversation so far that you really don't grow any of your own apples.
We buy fruit, primarily Henderson County. Earlier in the season, we were getting from Polk County, delicious and tasty, golden delicious, being grown down in Polk County, by the way. They're really high sugar. Within that region of Henderson County, you know, you've got some little overlaps there into the other counties. So, you know, and we pull from wherever we can to make our juice up.
So what is the crushing capacity you have? You know, somebody brings a ton of apples or 5 tons of apples?
On a typical juice day here, we'll press 2,000 gallons, which is roughly 32 boxes of apples, box being a 20-bushel bin, you know, the wooden boxes that most people are familiar with, you know, hanging out on the side of the road. If you drive down, those big wooden boxes. Typically, those are 20-bushel bins. You do get different sizes there, but so we'll get 32 of those boxes at a time. That'll yield around 2,000 gallons. In terms of ton of fruit, about 2.5 boxes is probably a ton, roughly. So we're getting quite a bit at once. And then in terms of our juicer, we have a squeeze box, they call it. It's made by Good Nature. And it'll do about, I'd say, between 350 and 450 gallons per hour, depending on the fruit, what time of the year it is. You know, sometimes it's easier to press than others. So, you know, you try and get blends of apples in. Grannies are fantastic for cleaning the back of it out, you know. And just, you know, you get that pectin buildup from the goldens. And there's little tricks of the trade that we do, liquid enzymes to help break that pectin up to make the juicing go a little smoother and stuff like that. But, yeah, that's a typical juice day for us, 2,000 gallons. Up until last week, we probably did about, I want to say maybe 36,000 gallons or so last year. And we'll, now that we're in the new space, we plan to grow well beyond that. We just didn't have the space down there in Fletcher. We basically moved from an 800-square-foot production room, and our building now is a little shy of 9,000 square feet. So we've got some room now to kind of do a little damage, as they say.
At this point in time, we're going to take a break. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Sadie's Old Fashioned Black Drawing Salve. Black Drawing Salve is an old-fashioned natural remedy used by miners, farmers, and homesteaders living in the Appalachian Mountains for over 100 years. Sadie first heard about the Black Drawing Salve while traveling to an Amish community just over the border of Madison County in Tennessee to have one of her steers butchered. She saw one of the butcher's sons applying what looked like tar to his arm after getting a large splinter from a fence post. She asked what he was putting on his arm. She was told it was a drawing salve to help pull out the splinter and make sure the area didn't get infected. Sadie was fascinated and wondered if it really worked. She also wondered if it would stain the skin. The farmer assured Sadie that it didn't stain the skin, and that they used it all the time in their community to help wound healing and drawing out things that were stuck in his skin. He said that it was even effective for spider bites, for drawing out venom. Sadie asked if there was a place to buy it. The farmer told her it was a home remedy that they made themselves. The farmer offered to write down the recipe for her since she was a customer for their butchering services. Sadie took the recipe back to her mountain home here in Marshall and whipped up a batch to try. Sadie learned that it really works. She's been making variations of this recipe ever since and putting them in a small salve tin container to sell. It takes a while to make, but it's very effective and well worth the time. It's especially good for drawing out splinters and pieces of glass that get stuck in the skin. She also found that it helps remove moles and skin tags. Sadie won't tell us her secret recipe, but confirms it includes many local herbs and materials, including comfrey, plantain, infused olive oil, beeswax, activated charcoal, mountain clay, honey, and lavender oil, among other things. Sadie's old-fashioned black drawing salve is another special product made in the good old U.S. of A. here at Madison County. You can buy Sadie's old-fashioned black drawing salve for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking on the phone with Trevor Baker, the owner and cider maker of Noble Cider down in Fletcher, North Carolina. Trevor, over the break, we were talking about your membership in some association with apples and ciders. Explain what that is.
It's the United States Association of Cider Makers. It's a newly formed trade organization association. It's going on 4 years old now. It was back in 2013 when it was formed. It kind of came out of the annual cider conference that happens every year, CiderCon, just happened actually a few weeks ago. I was elected to the board. The country is split up into regions. There are five regions, and I represent the South region, which is a pretty wide swath covering. Somehow it includes Maryland, even though I don't consider that South, but there you go. Maryland, D.C., all the way down through Louisiana and the southern states. There's about 8 or 9 states there. On the board, I function under many different committees. I'm the marketing chair. I'm also on the, we do some grants, research grant funding and things of that nature. So I'm pretty well in tune with the national cider world and it's been a great experience. It's my first experience on a board, and I've been really enjoying my time there. So,
well, board membership certainly do give you a different perspective that most people on the street have. Let me circle back just for a second, and let's talk about the capacity again. I was doing some calculations during the break here. How many cases and bottles is your capacity there at the cidery?
If we do it by juice day, let's say we've got, you know, say we do 2,000 gallons in one day, that equals to about 800 cases or so, a little shy of 10,000 bottles, if you want to do the math that way. But on an annual capacity, it's much more than that. We're going to be pushing to do about 100,000 gallons this year, which is a lot more cases. Then, you know, many, many times that.
That's a lot of cider, Trevor.
That is a lot of cider, yeah. We also do a lot of kegs, too, so we're on tap at a lot of locations.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, that's kind of how we started, actually, with keg markets.
Well, let's go back and talk just a second about the cider-making end of things. It occurred to me that folks might like to know about what kind of yeast you use.
Well, predominantly, we're using white wine yeast. We get dry yeast from Lauvin, actually one of the main brands that we buy from, which is a, I believe it's a Canadian brand, Canadian-European connections there. So we use various white wine yeast. We typically don't do a lot of champagne yeast, even though that's the predominant one that a lot of cider makers use. We like a little bit more character. A lot of people don't realize, general consumers, that, you know, the blend of apples is one thing that adds flavor profile, but yeast, I would say, is a good 50, if not more, 50% of flavor profile. People that make wine probably appreciate that, but people that do most of your drinking don't, you know, they don't have a concept of that. So we experiment with different yeasts all the time. Our main products, you know, we use the same yeast again and again for consistency, but we've used beer yeast in some of our small batch stuff, you know, like ales and lager yeast, and it's been fun experimenting with the flavor profiles of different yeasts. You know, when you do a trial blend and you've got 10 little carboys going of the same juice and 10 different yeasts on it, and then you taste them all and they're all different. It's kind of fascinating, really.
As an amateur winemaker, I used to do that years ago. That's how I came up the learning curve really quickly on making wines. Let's talk a bit about the blends. I know you do your apple juice thing with some other fruits. Talk to me about how you do that, how you come up with those particular recipes.
As you know, we have a lot of blueberries around here, and they're delicious. The Rabbit Eye blueberry is a fantastic blueberry. And so we get one of our ciders that we do in the spring is an apple-blueberry mix. We actually press the apple, of course, but we press the blueberries. And we get the juice from the blueberries, and we mix it together in the fermentation vat and ferment the two together along with some of the skins of the blueberry. So you pick up some of that nice, dark, deep color and some of the tannins, if they're, you know, what little bit of tannins are in blueberry skin. We do a range of mixed fruit ciders. Our tart cherry cider is actually not fermented with the cherry juice. It's more on the back end. We've experimented with fermenting cherry juice, and we never could get it to do what we wanted it to do flavor-wise. So the amateur wine guys or any winemaker will tell you, you know, some fruit doesn't come through after fermentation as much as you want it to. Cherry is one of those that just kind of changes different beverage altogether. So we wanted to really capture the cherry flavor, so we make a tart cherry cider that is back sweetened with the cherry juice. But whereas the blueberries, it's all fermented together, and the blueberries come through quite nicely. We also do a peach blend where we ferment with the peach and the apple together. We do a lot of honey, meads, and sizers, too, here in the tap room, small batch, which is a whole other category of delicious beverage that not a lot of people either know about or aren't exposed to, you know.
Well, Trevor, tell us about your cider. Do you have tours there?
Yeah, we offer tours. Either you can just come in and ask us. We're not too organized because, you know, we're typically here on the weekend. We're open in the tap room from Thursday through Sunday currently. So we're here, you know, 4 days out of the week right now. We're going to expand that as we move into summer.
And what hours?
Thursday through Saturday, we're here from 3:30 until 10. And then on Sundays, we're here from 2 until 8 p.m. And we have 20 taps on. We're at 356 New Leicester Highway in Asheville. We've let go of the Fletcher location just because it was too small, and you know, we were leasing it anyway, and we bought this building up here in Asheville. But yeah, stop by the tap room. We're here on the weekends, and we have 6 beers on taps, as well as the rest ciders. And we have right now we've got about 9 or 10 of our own ciders on tap. We have some guest ciders. We have a wonderful Spanish cider on tap from Spain. We have a French cider on tap. So we try and treat the tap room like an education component. You know, people can just come in and hang out for sure. We have a wonderful little space. You have a dart room and everything like that. But for people that want to come in and learn about cider, we really want to encourage that. They can get flights of cider and try different ciders side by side. And, you know, you can, at least in our tap room here, you can get a full range from around the world. You know, we carry some bottle ciders as well. It's a good experience.
If somebody's looking for you, how can people find you?
We have a webpage. It's noblecider.com. That's NOBLECIDER.com, where we keep posts going more on the blog side of things. But it has all of our tap room information there. We also have a Facebook page, which is probably where most people find us. We do a lot of updates there, and that's Noble Cider. You know, that's easy. You just type that in and you'll find us. Our hours are posted there, events that we do. We partner with the local cheese association here, and we do cheese pairings. In fact, we've got one coming up. I don't know the exact date. It hasn't been finalized yet, but it's coming up in April. We like to do things like that. You know, we like to have people come in and really encourage them to do flights and try ciders out, you know. You get a range of people coming in that have never had a cider or ones that have had cider, but, you know, they want to expand on their knowledge a little bit. And it's a great way to do that in the tap room. It's a very comfortable setting to, you know, like you say, it's a good way to learn when you're also drinking and enjoying product.
Absolutely. That's always fun to have guests come in and learn something as well as enjoy the products. So you have email address, telephone that they could use to reach out to you?
Yeah, we've got a, you know, if you want to email us, it's info@noblecider.com. And our telephone number is up on the webpage there. So I would encourage you to do the Facebook, and you'll get a lot more information there. And also the webpage where we post, because we do food trucks and we have music. So it's a good way to see what's going on any particular weekend. And that's the best way to do it.
Who knew that Johnny Appleseed would have started such a thing?
Indeed, yes. Johnny Appleseed, our famous hero of early American culture. John Chapman was his official name. Johnny Appleseed, yeah, he was quite the character. He was actually more interested in growing apples for cider production. A lot of people think he was just, you know, growing around eating fruit and, you know, eating apples and things of that nature. But he was actually primarily growing apples from seed to start with, and then cultivating ones, you know, doing grafting on ones that he liked for cider production. And his whole scheme was he would move ahead of westward expansion, essentially, as the colonies were expanding and growing westward. He was the guy that would go ahead of that, plant trees, you know, develop a nursery. And then as your homesteaders would move in, he was there for them, and he would sell them trees to grow in their own homestead plots. But back then, you know, cider was safer to drink than the water. So you had a lot of cider production happening in the early days of the U.S., and he was a key component in that. In fact, even today, you know, all the way up, almost all the way across to the Mississippi River there, you can still find homesteads that have that traditional apple plot, you know, that he probably sold. He was a good businessman, let's put it that way. And he understood the need of, he was able to anticipate the need of the settlers moving west, and he was there to capitalize on that. And he sold them apple trees for cider production, as well as eating apples. Every now and then you come across one that's good for eating too, right?
I do know that apples don't breed true from seeds. We have the same problem with grapes here in the mountains, but one way or the other, we succeed. We've been speaking with Trevor Baker, who's the owner and cider maker of Noble Cider in Leicester, North Carolina. Trevor, we really appreciate your taking time to be with us today, and thank you so much for your insight and information.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Well, we look forward to coming out to your place on a Thursday or Friday or Saturday and tasting some of your goods. I suggest anybody who's interested in getting a good local cider to pop on down your way on a weekend and check it out over in Leicester, North Carolina.
Yeah, just on the edge of the town there. We're right between Asheville and before you get into Leicester there. So 356 New Leicester Highway.
Okay, folks, you've heard it directly from a horse's mouth, so to speak. Trevor, again, thank you very much, and we'll call that a wrap for today's program.
Thank you very much.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers! Thank you.